This is Between the Covers. Literature Quickie here on your community radio station with your host, Tofu Dave. Another episode, and we've got a provocative, exciting new book, Black, White, Colored, The Hidden Story of an Insurrection. And I've got one of the authors, Liane Noble, on the phone with me now. Hello, Liane.
Hello, Tofu Dave.
Well, listen, your book, I know this history, but I'm not sure if a lot of my educated UNC-going Chapel Hill audience knows the story of what's happened in a small town in North Carolina that you cover in The Hidden Story of an Insurrection, a Family, a Southern Town, and Identity in America. Liane Noble, tell me the story of Black, White, and Colored.
Yes, well, my mother, Loretta Malloy Noble, entered on a journey of digging into my grandfather's stories. My grandfather was one of those Southern men who, wherever he would go, he would have a conversation with you and tell you about his life, about his family, and have that exchange with you. And we've been hearing these stories throughout our lives. And my mother dug into them and discovered that in his Laurinburg town, not only were they a wealthy Black community, not only did they work with Booker T. Washington to start the first Black boarding school in the United States, but they were also the location where the insurrection of 1898 started. So after that, it went on to Wilmington and other places, but this was another one of those hubs that were a focus because of all the progress that they were making with communities coming together. Both Black people, white people had come together and made extreme progress in the community. So we discovered that, and this book not only dives into that event and how Laurinburg is connected to that event, it also dives into just the power that we have when we come together, when allies come together with each other, and how we can push things forward together and feed into each other's needs. It also digs into a family's resilience through all of these factors, and how, you know, my great-grandfather, William Malloy, was born the year that slavery ended, and the accomplishments that he was able to achieve through the community, through that Laurinburg community, were just incredible for that time period. He wanted to be a medical doctor, and he went to medical school but wasn't able to practice due to many of the systemic blocks. But he was able to send all of his children, all of his sons, to medical school, and his daughters became nurses. So he was able to see his dreams come into fruition due to the progress that had been made during Reconstruction and other periods. So this book highlights the power of us coming together, the connectivity of community. It shines a light on the past so that we can also see the path to the future in a better way.
Right, and you sort of took it to the present, and let me also, for my listeners, orient. We're over here in, you know, Chapel Hill, Carrboro area, right near Durham. We have a local professor, Timothy Tyson, that has done a lot of research on this type of thing, wrote a great book about some events that happened not too far from here with his book, Blood Don't Sign My Name. He's been on our show. And to place things a little bit geographical, history-wise, Laurinburg, I'd say, is about halfway sort of between Charlotte and Wilmington, down there a little south of Fayetteville. And my listeners, I know the story of the pro-slavery insurrection in Wilmington. That really was one of the early attacks on democracy, that they overthrew a legally elected, democratically elected government, with a lot of African-American leaders and with incredible violence overthrew that government and, in a way, instituted a very repressive, violent dictatorship, if I may say it, not overstating too much, back in the late 1800s, 1898, a year you just mentioned. And you're alleging that this insurrection started or somehow was connected to events with your family in Laurinburg. Am I reading that history correctly?
Yes, it was a series of rallies actually that took place in different locations. So by the time they got to Wilmington, it was on this tour of sorts of rallies to stop people from voting.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. That was it, to instill fear so that people wouldn't want to vote, because there were so many black people who were registered to vote, so many Republicans at that time who were registered to vote, that challenged a lot of the things that they wanted to take place. So, you know, the whole community of Laurinburg was there, and
right.
Our family, you know, were proud, still proud Laurinburg folk. So it was Wilmington being like the culmination of a series of different rallies that had taken place.
And one of the things I got from your book is that Laurinburg was, of course, much smaller population-wise than Wilmington or even Charlotte back in the day. But from your writing and your family, it was sort of a very educated microcosm in the African-American community. Somehow, via the days back then after slavery and whatnot, people in your family, that community, were able somehow to become, from your recounting, exceptionally well-educated, and that impressed me. Was that really the case so strongly?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I, there was such a denial of education, of course, during slavery, and that in 1865, black schools were a prominent thing because people were hungry to learn. It was something that had been denied, and, you know, people risked their lives to read books, to take in education. And so after the insurrection, you have Booker T. Washington coming into Laurinburg and with the McDuffie family and starting Laurinburg Institute, which is the first black boarding school in the United States of America. And that was a school where not only were there vocational studies, you know, Booker T. Washington was a big proponent of having vocational studies as well as core curricula and beyond. So you had an extremely full curricula that was taking place at Laurinburg Institute, as well as a hospital, Bigelow Hospital, that was part of the school as well. And then you have Meharry. You have all these opportunities through HBCUs, which we get heavily into in the book, and you have Johnson C. Smith. So you have all of these universities where you can now become a doctor. You can now have access to educational materials that you haven't had before. You had a lot of, you know, not all HBCUs were founded by black people. So you have incredible allies who were starting HBCUs so that black people could have education, and part of that circle of working together to better improve the economy and the community.
Yeah.
So yes, indeed, like my great grandfather made sure that everybody was going, and all of his children went to Laurinburg Institute as well and taught there. So when my grandfather would go to school, he might be sitting in a class. Him and who ended up being his best friend, Dizzy Gillespie, would be in class with my aunt. teaching them. So
yeah, right. That was so impressive to me. And, you know, education, I think, is so highly valued, should be so highly valued. Unfortunately, some people, you know, in the community don't get raised with that value to education. But you really show some of it. And, again, the book is black, white, colored. Subtitled, The Hidden Story of an Insurrection, a Family, a Southern Town, and Identity in America by Loretta Malloy Noble and her daughter, who we're talking to, Leonae Noble. Now, listen, Leonae, this is a community radio. We're in a university town here, and I must ask you a possibly provocative type of question just to get your thoughts on it. It's somewhat tangential in that it's not directly in the book, but I remember growing up, I heard my parents argue, and there were lots of debates, within the community between, say, the Booker T. Washington approach to change, and maybe I'll say the Du Bois approach to change. And sometimes they seem to have been a little bit in loggerheads, where Booker T. would try to emphasize, look. And again, I may be overstating, but I'm trying to be a little provocative, frankly. His view might be, look, go to school, get an education, don't ruffle the feathers too much. And where the Du Bois point of view was, yes, we need to be education, but we need it so that we can be aggressive, we can ruffle the feathers. And this has been a debate going on for hundreds of years, and it's so hard to resolve. And it sounded like, and I'm just imagining a little historically, we talked about 1898, how some of this stuff that happened in Wilmington may have started out towards Laurinburg and then concentrated this insurrection in Wilmington, and Wilmington was where it really became bloody. So I'm wondering, does this have anything to do with some debates in the community over responses, where we had one point of view in Laurinburg and another in the community in Wilmington? Or am I overthinking this a little bit? What do you think about this question of the Booker T. versus William Du Bois kind of debates that have gone on?
So I think, okay.
I know it's a heavy question.
Yes. No, definitely. That in our research and diving into these different perspectives, and I think Laurinburg in particular, because there was a man named McNeely who was a there were different McNeely, and there were some others who were prominent in the community who reached out and had direct contact with Booker T. Washington. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so the reaction of focusing on education and feeding into the community and becoming entrepreneurs and really making sure that they were creating this insular type of
protective, maybe protective.
Yes. That this that they were building within to have a shift to make sure that they were fully loaded with the wealth, with the education, with these things, so they could fight in that way, was because of their direct connection with Booker T. Washington. But my grandparents, you know, Lawrence and Lonsy, they were not afraid to speak up. They were not afraid to get out there in the streets. And I think that you took in WEB, you took in Booker T. Washington, you took in Martin Luther King, you took in Malcolm X, you took in these different, you listened to them all to inform.
Try to learn from them all.
Exactly. I think that's the important part. The rallies, even though the one in Wilmington that's the one that we have on record the most. But there was, in the research that we discovered, every rally there was violence involved. So it was not just just the one that occurred in Wilmington. So the Gatling guns, shouting and chasing after people, and they weren't just chasing after black people, they were chasing after people who were part of the political party that they were opposing. So you had actual white senators and figures who were, there was this one who were chased and harassed in some of the same ways. So it was about the stance of them coming together as well as race. So I think there's a mix. I think you listen to WEB and you put that into play when you need to put that into play. You put Booker T, what was in their pocket. Booker T. Washington had a contact with the McDuffie family who had been doing work at universities, at HBCUs, and said, okay, this is the time where we need to make sure that, because in particular the Board of Education was targeted, and we needed to make sure that the black students in the community are still being fed education-wise. And so that was the response. Like, we're going to build. And that's what my grandfather grew up in. Like, his father was, there during the insurrection and what had occurred at that time. And then he, being raised up, was going to a boarding school and fancy parties with prominent athletes, and the family had, a fancy car. They were the first family in the community to have a car. And so he was working businesses, and he saw his father being able to go on both sides of the tracks, I'll say.
And you have so many good stories in there, the car being in particular a nice one, which I urge people to read, and you're right, we got to learn from who we can, where we can, when we can, and education, I think, is the key. Again, the book, Black, White, Colored, I'm talking to Leone Noble. Leone, thank you so much for chatting with us on Between the Covers. Any last words you'd like to convey to our listeners?
Yes, this was such a wonderful process of working with my mother and diving into our family stories. And it's so important that we continue to talk and ask questions to our elders and learn their stories, because in that, even if they're not related to us, we learn so much about ourselves, our community, and our history, to have a fuller picture, because there's some history and historic stories that are living inside of people that are around us, and it's just about talking to them and asking them the questions.
You are so right. Thank you, Leone, for those words. Again, this has been another edition of Between the Covers, a literature quickie with your host, Tofu Dave. We'll be right back at you next week with another fine title to provoke your thoughts and your thinking. See you then.